Okay, are we all back?
Yep.
Okay, great. So, are there any announcements? Well, I guess I'd like to make one. I was kind of hoping Mark would be on the call, but I don't know. Mark, are you there? Well, just so everybody knows, Mark is, he's probably mentioned this before, but this is his last week with the CLEAN Project. Mark is moving on to a new opportunity with the National Center for Science Education. And so I just wanted to publicly thank Mark for all of his efforts on this project. He will remain a member of the Climate Literacy Network. Never fear about that. He's also going to be an advisory board member to the CLEAN Project. So we're not letting him get completely away, but I just wanted to publicly acknowledge Mark's contribution to the Climate Literacy Network and to the CLEAN Pathway Project as he makes this transition.
Yeah, he's been instrumental to so much of what we've been doing for the last couple of years.
Right.
Tamara, is it possible to perhaps, when Mark gets his legs beneath him on his new project, invite him to give us a foundational briefing on this new project that's emerging?
Sure.
At NCC?
We were in talk with who is now Mark's boss, I think it's Josh Rosenow, I think, who basically said, oh, I don't want to give a talk. This is Josh was saying, I don't want to give a talk until we've hired our climate person. Well, Mark is the climate person, and I actually talked to Mark last week and said that was sort of the plan, to wait until that was it, and he said, that's great. And I said, well, certainly Mark's not going to have any problem doing a presentation for us. So he's totally on board with that, so we just have to schedule it.
Fantastic.
Great.
Yeah, I think it's good.
And just so that everybody knows, we have been, Scott and I have been working pretty hard to get a presentation schedule together for the Climate Literacy Network, and we have a lot of the CSEP projects, climate change education projects, are coming up. And next week, actually, John Anderson will be giving a talk from the New England Aquarium. His project is the National Network for Ocean and Climate Change Interpretation. And then in January, we have a number of talks. Stephanie Fearman will talk about the Polar Learning and Response Polar Climate Partnership. We will also have Noah Newman from the Colorado Climate Center talk about Kokoros. That's not a CSEP project, but it's certainly a relevant climate change project. And then on the 24th of January, we have Jeffrey Ryan, the Coastal Areas Climate Change Education Partnership Project, will be giving a talk. And on February 7th, Jessica Thompson, Changing the Conversation, a Place-Based Approach to Climate Change Education and Engagement in America's Public Lands. And then on February 14th, the Climate Literacy Zoo Education Network, with Alejandro Grajal. I'm not sure that's how you pronounce his name. And then on February 28th, we have Ed Maybach, the TV weathercasters, as climate educators. And those are all, so I think that we have on the order of half of the CSEP projects scheduled, and we're working on getting the rest of them.
Yeah,
so
the rest are in discussion, so
yes.
We're good. A full program this year.
Okay, so we can sort of give a debrief about the AGU meeting, but I want to capture if there are any other announcements yet that people want to make. Okay, if not, then we'll just talk a bit about the AGU meeting. We had, for those of you who weren't there, we had 5 named sessions in climate literacy. We had one in K-12. We had one in higher education. We had one focused on integration of research and education. We had one focused around making how are we making progress in this area? Basically, evaluation efforts. And we had one, I'm not sure which ones got combined. We had some talks on informal education contexts also. All of the sessions were on Monday and Tuesday, and the one thing that was, for those of us who have attended education sessions at AGU before, usually while we're integrated into this large scientific community with an attendance of on the order of 20,000 people, we go to the education sessions, and for the most part, we really are talking to ourselves. It's great that we're in these sessions because we are raising our visibility, but this year was different. This year, the sessions were packed.
Yeah.
We had, it was incredible, the interest in these sessions this year, both the poster sessions and the oral sessions. Even the last session on Tuesday afternoon was from 4 to 6 p.m., and you can imagine, that was actually my session. You can imagine how 4 to 6 p.m. usually might have very low attendance. Well, I didn't count at the beginning, but at the end of the session, we had 30 people there. And in the past, if we started with the 30 people, we were lucky. This time, that was the lowest number. Like I said, we had packed room. We had tremendous interest. In the session that I was a convener for, the K-12 session, we left an open slot at the end and had a panel discussion around obstacles that people were encountering in terms of moving forward in this area and other kinds of activities people were engaged in. The other activity that we had at the meeting was, and Frank can talk about this more because he was the big presence there, at the NOAA booth, the Clean Pathway Project had a space where, as most of you know, as we go through the review process for each of the resources we review, the last step for everything that's passed every other bar is to get an expert science review. And so we were there soliciting expert science reviews from the scientists at AGU. And my understanding that by the end of the meeting, we had commitments for 76 expert science reviews of resources, which is really great. I mean, we have a ways to go since the last review camp passed on the order of 230-some. Mm-hmm. So we still have a ways to go, but that's a big dent. Usually we're counting them in the tens, not the, you know. So I know, Frank, if you want to describe that process or how it went any further, or you can talk about any of the sessions. And Scott, you also were there, and I don't know if anybody else on the phone was also there that might want to contribute their perspectives on how the AGU meeting went.
So the clean review process, I think, I was very happy that NOAA Exhibits offered us the space to do what we did. I think once the initial time in the exhibit hall, when everybody just ran all over the place, finished, when people came back in, they were more thoughtful and paused. And that's really when we were able to get the large variety and depth. We came up, people would come up, and we would just have a simple conversation with them, used a visual board to say, you know, these are the topics that we're working on, this is what we're trying to do, and they were, you know, very willing to take one or two, sometimes more, resources and provide us to review. It was a simple process, but really, we hope, a very valuable, both marketing strategy that socialize what Clean is doing in the science community, but then also to really get those topical expert reviews. I don't know if we have any sense of if we've gotten any of the 76 that have been done, but it's a fairly simple process that we designed, and I think that it's spot on. So on the sessions side, any questions about that or any elaborations?
I just like to say, I mean, the challenge now is to make sure that we actually get those reviews. And so, and Anna's the one that can check to see, she's the one that created the SurveyMonkey, which is where the form is that the reviewers would go to. So she's the one that could tell us. But we're going to have to really devise a follow-up process to actually make sure that we actually get those 76 reviews.
Well, the one thing that I think some people who were there, sometimes they were lab directors or branch directors or, you know, the head of a team at a university who does, you know, polar observations or something like that. And they there were people who were saying, oh, just give me all the paleoclimate. I'll get my team to take care of all of these. I think, you know, while the initial benefit is the science reviews, I think the more fruitful path down in the future is really broadening the scientific community who are willing to do this work and really you know, do it in a different way of engagement, which is, you know, this group of scientists at this unit will take these types of topics. And I think that that's a strategy that will be more likely, you know, fruitful down the road. Hopefully we won't have to do this kind of engagement because it's a lot of work and you know, probably, I don't know what percentage we're going to get out of this process, but I don't think it's going to be 100%. So, but, you know, we'll see. But I think that the take-home message is that there are a lot of people who are willing to do a 20-minute review or a 40-minute review on something that's very specific to their expertise. And that's all to the good.
Yeah. Yeah. The other comment I can make, this is Scott, I think it was certainly great from a publicity perspective. A lot of people who maybe didn't take any of the cards for the reviews, but they really were, you know, got a little bit of an earful about what we've been up to, and we're very interested and supported in that. The other thing that happened for me through, you know, the time I was there was actually some people had some suggestions for resources and things, places to look. So there's some follow-up from that. We may even get some things on the website for, you know, with other people making suggestions for other resources for us to look at. So I thought it was a really helpful process, and I just hope we get all 76 reviews. That would be good. That's the main.
I don't think 100% is going to happen, but okay. you know, 80%. Anyway,
but one of the things that someone suggested is, if we have very specific topics, we literally could use the AGU abstract sort of database and find people who are working in those areas and just simply send them an email and see if we can use AGU
that's
that
very
way.
Labor. The problem is that sounds good, but it's very labor intensive.
Absolutely.
What I started to do, and I actually did send out an email, but I think I'm going to follow up now with the leadership of each section that's relevant to CLEAN. So the atmospheric science section and the oceanography section and the hydrology section, there's a president and there are other officers. I know there's a secretary, and there may be a president-elect for each section. And I sent emails to all of them prior to the AGU meeting asking them to forward on the information to their members.
Okay.
And I didn't hear back from any of them. So what I'm thinking I'm going to do is follow up with them now and see if we can get a it doesn't have to be like Frank said at the AGU meeting. If we can engage them through email and through their sections, that might be a more effective way of an efficient way of going.
Well, this is certainly the pool of folks who have the expertise that we're looking for. You know, almost exclusively, we're always looking at geosciences here. I think it's a...
Okay. So, Frank, you wanted to make some comments on the meeting itself? I don't know where Frank went.
You lost Frank.
How about you, Scott?
Well, I was... I was very impressed and pleased with the number of people were there. I noted, you know, with some pleasure that there were a couple of talks that actually referenced CLEAN, folks that I didn't know and didn't know that they knew us on the CLEAN project. So it's certainly having an impact on folks who are looking at education resources. So I think the other thing that was really good for me, and I mean maybe professionally, was that we had almost all of the CCEP, the Climate Change Education Partnership, folks were there, and was certainly a great opportunity to meet them. There was a bit of a get together on the Tuesday evening, but even in the sessions, it was an opportunity to meet people who we know by name, but maybe some of us had never met. So it was a nice sort of opportunity, as these meetings often are, to actually have sort of some personal connection and. That can only lead to good things. So I was, that's a great part of AGU. It's a huge meeting, but ultimately it becomes just a collection of small meetings that you sort of, you end up staying in the same couple of rooms. I think there's only about three rooms I was ever in.
That's true. I mean, for me, the AGU has evolved into a way of a networking avenue because there's so many people on the projects that I need to talk to who are there, and then so many other people that, like you said, who we hear and know, but we don't get to meet very often. Unfortunately, the one only downside for me with having all of those concentrated climate literacy sessions is that I couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, and I missed things. It was not possible to do them all at the same time.
I usually like to go to the union sessions because that covers the breadth of earth sciences and usually are supposed to be of broader interest than just the research community that's involved. And so those are usually very, very interesting. There were also some really interesting extra sessions like the airing of Richard Alley's film, the newest version of the handbook Earth, I forget the one. Earth's Operating Manual, right. And Richard was there. He gave a talk in one of the climate literacy sessions also. So,
yep.
So that was great. Was anybody else on the phone there at the AGU meeting?
The one thing I just wanted to add in this session, the other sessions that were attended, I think there were, I can't remember how many total sessions there were, but between oral and poster, it was somewhere like 10 to 12 total.
There was a total of 12 because we had one of each. We had one poster session, one oral session for each stated session. So there was a total of 10.
So the session that Mark convened had well over 100 people in it. Very diverse perspectives, it was overflow attendance. And the room was very hot and also engaged. So it was really a major increase in the participation and attendance. One thing I'm still looking for is access to a lot of the slides. I'm not sure if the new AGU system allows us to see those talks.
The only thing they're collecting is e-posters, but one thing we can do is we could potentially send an email out to all the presenters and see if we can get a collection of those presentations.
There's a list of all the presentations on our sort of event calendar, so that would be a really good place just to put the slides.
Right. Because there was a lot of rich research that people are doing, like Gail Sinatra and other people who are, the citations that were mentioned in these slide sets were really, really impressive. And I think that the community, as they build arguments for future proposals, if they're ever grants again, it would be helpful. But I think it's just there's a richness to the community that was really impressive.
Yep.
Scott, is there a way, the list you're looking at, is there an easy way to extract the emails of the people who presented at the sessions?
I don't think it's easy, but it's in there.
Okay. Maybe I'll see if I can have Sarah. But if it's in there, and where is it? It's just in the agenda?
Yeah, you have to keep drilling down.
Okay.
Now, there was something, there was some absolute heresy promoted in one of the sessions, and it was about free the metadata was what it was called. And that is, there's a movement to encourage AGU to release all of this kind of information in a much more accessible form. And so they were calling it free the metadata. This was, needless to say, a session on metadata. So.
They actually had a very nice mobile app to use during the meeting, which I was able to use. I had only one complaint, is that to actually see the abstract, once you actually got to the particular talk, like it was three clicks in to see the actual abstract.
And even to find out who was talking, too.
Who was talking? It could be any session.
Who the author was.
Yes.
But it was very useful for us to be able to have something rather than the newspapers that are used normally. Are there any questions from folks who weren't there now about what went on, since there's three of us have been talking away here?
No, this is Caroline. Just a comment. It seems like it's our time, finally, eh?
Yes.
And the spotlight on education and permeating, the science curriculum to be climate rich, and very proud of us,
yes.
Of you all. actually. I think it's great.
And this is a meeting that's huge. I gather that there were over 21,000 people there.
Wow.
At this meeting. Wow. So,
well, a couple of my FIU scientists down here actually came back quite buzzed about the education and the poster sessions. And,
We definitely dominated the education poster sessions, at least from my perspective. I don't think there's ever been a coordinated set of sessions before like we had.
And I think it's really helpful that we called it climate literacy, you know, colon, so there was a kind of common brand.
That was huge. Because it meant that even if you only saw the first half of the title, then you got lots of you got them all together.
Yes,
they alphabetically came together, and you didn't have to kind of search to figure out what was what. And it was kind of interesting. I got on the AGU session planner online, and I searched for just the words climate literacy. And so what came up was each of the sessions plus each of the talks that had the words climate literacy in their sessions, even if they weren't in one of our sessions. So an example, I was actually a co-convener for a session outside of our climate literacy one. It had to do with teacher ambassadors in the earth sciences, well, not only earth and space sciences. And I had invited Steve Ackerman from University of Wisconsin-Madison to come and talk about their climate literacy ambassador program. And so even though that wasn't explicitly a climate literacy session, that paper showed up too. So, and the thing is that was the only other paper that showed up outside of our sessions that used the term climate literacy, at least in the title.
Yeah. There was some discussion, this is a little bit different, that I thought was really interesting. There are a number of reports on surveys, and I think I'm thinking of some stuff that, what's her name? Mary Hassel, is that the right name? Is it? No, Mary's not the right name.
Susan Hassel.
Susan. And it was very interesting to talk about sort of the knowledge and willingness to act on climate change research and how it was mapped to political affiliations, and interesting in a way that was opposite with political affiliation and actually social, which was the point that she was making, was a social group that you're a member of. That was much more determinant of your what your views would be rather than education. So that, in fact, even more education did not necessarily mean that your understanding and certainly your response to climate change was the same as folks in a slightly different social group. I thought that was really interesting and in some ways a little chilling to sort of the message we sort of keep telling ourselves, oh, it's more education.
Wasn't there the graph that showed that Democrats with more education were more aligned with really feeling that climate change was a major issue, and Republicans with more education were less inclined to believe it was an issue?
Yes, I thought that was I totally unexpected to me. That was very interesting.
But you know, there's a really important point in that, and that is that is independent of what we educate them about.
Yeah,
just the status of their current level of education and their current positions on these issues, not what happened during their education, which is a really important point because I think, you know, we struggle with how to educate, not more now than what to educate. I think we've got the what. I don't think we have the how yet, and I think that research does point to a real issue, but I think that we still have some issues to deal with of the how that don't engender or replicate or perpetuate that issue.
Yeah.
Well,
this
is Caroline Lewis here, and you know, this climate change education and engagement has taken a lot of my attention for the past year and a half, and listening to you all today is very heartwarming. But first, in broad strokes, the validity of what we're doing with climate literacy education and the clean pathway, kudos. I think nobody could dispute that we're needed. But in terms of how we educate, you know, Susan spoke at the National Academy Summit in D.C. that I went to in November 2010, and we've been talking a lot about this, you know, the Fix Americas and how people need different multiple access points, and you got to know your audience, and the messenger has to be somebody who connects. And the reality is that most of us are speaking or facilitating speaking to multiple audiences. So my takeaway when I come away from all of this is, okay, you guys are in the K-22 curriculum like nobody's business, and making sure we're heard and we're accurate and we're... And I'm trying to get into the engagement world where there's social learning around this topic. So there are multiple access points. But the big thing for me is we need all of it.
Yeah.
We need, it's not how people learn, it's a one cookie cutter answer that's going to hit us like a thunderbolt, because it's not going to work for everybody in any one way. And so I think the multiple access points is the way to approach this. And by that I mean, you know, science cafes,
right,
and movie nights, and these videos we have these kids making, and all those are all great because they trigger the conversation. And I think that conversation sometimes feeds the need to learn. And so what you were doing with the K-22 curriculum is, I hope, I think, building the capacity to learn this deep science, and the access and engagement are making them want to learn and engage on it. And so to me, I think, I'm listening for about a year and a half now, and I'm feeling more optimistic today than I was back then. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we're engaging with these questions about how to engage and how people learn and how to get them to care and act and believe and think and know. So the thing I presented on the CLIO project, so that question, to get 100,000 people to answer that question, what is climate change all about and what's my role, is picking up tremendous speed because scholars and slugs alike feel able to take on a 3-page or a 3-minute response. And that, to me, is a way of engagement, so that you're going to cast a wide net and get a couple of people doing very surface learning, but you're going to get a ton learning a whole lot more in sometimes unintended, unscripted ways.
Mm-hmm.
But access to all the information on the CLEAN network and all the literacy tools that you all have provided, to me, is what feeds this iterative education and engagement cycle that we're all playing in. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of where my brain has come around this whole climate change engagement and education.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to go on that long.
Good.
No, I think that's exactly it. I think it sort of takes all of us doing, you know, lots of a whole range of different kinds of things and thinking about lots of different kinds of audiences, and no one group or no one person can address it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are no magic bullets here, but there are a lot of magic bullets. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Quite a nice challenge. I'll give you a quick example. I went to a 2-day summit in Key Largo last week. And here, I'm living in the middle of Miami, knee-deep in climate change education. And I didn't even know this was happening in my backyard. But 4 of our southeast counties, Miami-Dade, Broward, Monroe, and Palm Beach counties, together population-wise is bigger than 35 states, they have a climate change compact that they've been working on at the city, county, and other levels with incredible scientific input.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a plan that's now 3 years old of actually trying to mitigate and adapt and make Miami as resilient as we can in light of climate change. So I was like, well, what is this, a secret? I mean, I don't think their efforts are robust enough or their projections are firm enough, but holy Toledo, it's a start. And the fact that people are doing this and the scientists and the city people are working together, it's that. And there were 350 people of all walks, from the climate scientists to the nonprofits to the business world to all the mayors and county commissioners in town. So I think that wave of disinformation and climate denial, I think the worst of it is over. And I think that CLEAN and this climate literacy network, and all of us have to roll up our sleeves and be ready to just jump in and provide what people need, because they're becoming much more willing to access information and data and learning tools and so on, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm just patting everybody here on the back. I think what you guys have done is just pretty amazing, and it really has fired me up, because I got to find the hope.
The kind of engagement we got at the AGU meeting, I agree with Scott that the way we titled it, I think that we should do this again next year with the same kind of strategy, but I think we should think about this. The other meeting that we tried to put together a coordinated set of presentations is the NAAEE meeting, and we might think about seeing if we can get the – there it's a little bit different because we're not proposing sessions, we're proposing presentations. But if we could get a common – beginning of the titles of each of the presentations, that might help make it. I mean, this year there was a climate change strand at NAAEE, but there were other talks, but there was never shown, at least as far as I could see, as a coherent whole. But there isn't one. That thread is not explicitly defined next year, so it might be useful to think about doing that in these other venues.
Yeah, well, packaging matters, so I'm glad that you're, looking at that and seeing how to maximize people's access to you. So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing we're doing, I neglected to mention, is that the CLEAN project, we have these, for secondary teachers, we have these interactive webinars once a month, and the next one is on Thursday. And we pair a scientist with an educator. I'm actually going to be the scientist, and Betsy Youngman is going to be the educator, and we're addressing Essential Principle 4.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on Thursday. And it's late. I think we've actually closed registration, but if anybody really wants to participate, you can just let us know, and we'll give you the contact information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there anything else?
No.
Well, as I said before, next week we have John Anderson from the New England Aquarium talking about the informal ocean science interpreters CSEP project, and that will be next week.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk to everybody then.
That's great.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Great talk. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.